recently, my wife and I were invited to speak at the Arkansas Homesteading Conference in Ryzen, Arkansas. And this wasn't our first time at the conference. A couple years ago, I had the opportunity to speak there on the topic of cottage food laws. The organizer of the event, Mr. Britt Talent, who, by the way, I've really enjoyed getting to know, a great guy, very knowledgeable, with a passion to help others along in their own homesteading journeys. Britt reached out to me back in 2021, I guess it was, having stumbled upon one of my podcasts on cottage foods and asked me to give a presentation. Well, as I said, we were graciously invited back to speak again. This time, Amy was asked to present her beginner's canning class, and I was asked to talk on the subject of full-time homesteading, how it was we made the transition from the office job to the farm. In this talk, I shared our story and gave several key principles, several strategic steps of how we made all of that a reality for us. So this episode is my recording of that talk. I apologize that you'll have to listen without all the slides that go along with it. I may get that uploaded to our website if it's something people are interested in. But even without those slides, I hope what I present here is still helpful to you. I'll go ahead and invite you, if you haven't already, to subscribe to our YouTube channel or podcast. Check out our website at thecanardhomestead.com to learn more about us or to shop our online store. Without further ado, here's my talk, From the Office to the Homestead. Hope you enjoy.
All right, well, we'll get started. My name is Tim Canard with the Canard Homestead. My lovely wife, Amy, and I, together with our five kids, we do live on a small working family farm about halfway between Mayflower and Cabot, north of Camp Robinson, right on the edge of Faulkner and Pulaski County. So we do describe ourselves as full-time homesteaders, and here in a little bit I'll explain for you what we mean by that. But what I'm going to do in this talk is share with you what full-time homesteading, what that means for us, and I want to give you several practical strategies, several tactics that we use to make that all a reality for us. And if you're a note taker and if this is something that interests you and you also would love to one day leave the 9-to-5, leave the day job, then when we get to that part of the talk, there's going to be several points that you might want to be ready to write down. Before we get into all that, I thought it might be fun to just give you a little bit of an overview of the homesteading movement in general, at least in the modern American sense of the term. It's really interesting if you do a little research on the phrase homesteading or homestead, you'll find that its most common usage in printed materials and public conversation, or what we might say its most trending moments over the last 200 years. It wasn't, say, during the Great Depression era of the 20s and 30s, when we had thousands of people pouring out of the cities, having lost their jobs, having, in some cases, lost their fortunes when the markets crashed, to find work on the rural farm. Though that did happen, and on the chart you could just see like a little upward tick right there. But it wasn't then. And it also wasn't during the famous back-to-the-land movement of the 60s and 70s, though there again, you have a little upward incline. And it's not even what we're seeing happen right now with the infamous Blue State Exodus. How many of you are familiar with the Blue State Exodus? Whether it's the result of undesired policies or out-of-control crime or overregulation, the Census Bureau, regardless of what your politics are on all of that, the Census Bureau does report that this is happening, that there's this migration of sorts taking place from some of your more blue urban pockets of the country to your more red rural spots. And that is true. But just to say, that's not even the most trending moment for homesteaders. But by far, overwhelmingly, the biggest trending moment was the 1860s and thereafter. And who could tell me what was going on in the 1860s? Anybody want to shout it out? What is it? The Civil War. Of course, yes, the Civil War was taking place from 1861 to 1865, but right in the middle of that, in 1862, was the Homesteading Act, signed by President Lincoln. His desire was to spur economic growth. His desire was to help develop the West. And so the government made available practically millions of acres of land, free of charge. Well, for a small filing fee, of course. But basically free of charge to anyone who is willing to stake claim to that land and to settle it. So we're talking about eager, aspiring homesteaders to do this. And here in a minute, I'll talk about why that was so important and why even our government understood it was important for citizens to be settlers of the land. But the actual act reads, "Be it enacted that any person who is the head of a family or who has arrived at the age of 21 years and is a citizen of the United States shall be entitled to enter one quarter section or less of unappropriated public land." By the way, in surveying terms, when we're talking about a section of land, we're talking about basically 1 square mile at 640 acres. So one quarter section would be about 160 acres. 160 acres free of charge to any person willing to make a go of it as a homesteader on the western frontier. The act goes on to say, "And be it further enacted that the person applying for said land shall make affidavit that he or she is the head of a family." And by the way, just as an aside, when it comes to homesteading, I think the argument could be made that it's a lot easier to do that as a family, right? There's a lot of work to be done on a farm. There are some jobs uniquely suited for husband to do, some suited for wife to do, lots of chores that are suitable for lots of little hands to do. And we found that that to be true on our farm. I cannot imagine getting done all the things that need to be done by myself. But just to say, notice the provision. He or she. There are stories from the pioneering movement about single ladies and single moms setting out to stake their own claim. No man needed. And they would homestead by themselves. And I imagine it might be harder to do by yourself, but by no means is homesteading understood to be exclusive to the traditional family, though by sheer number, the traditional family would make that a lot easier. But it goes on to say, "And that said person has never borne arms against the government." What's that all about? Remember, Civil War. So from the perspective of Congress, from the perspective of President Lincoln, those loyal to the government would be your Northerners. They'd be your Union soldiers. Whereas your Southerners, your Confederate sympathizers, they would not have been eligible for this land. So, as Arkansans, many of this room would not have been able to take advantage of this homesteading land. Then it says that this land is used for the purpose of actual settlement and cultivation. So, when we're talking about homesteading land, we're not talking about land that, you know, you use for a seasonal hunting cabin. This isn't land that you have set aside as an emergency bug out location if the peanut butter hits the fan, right? This isn't even a piece of land that you're expected to be able to flip for a profit. It's free land, so why not get it and then sell it and make a profit out of the deal? No. Homesteading land is meant to be settled and cultivated. There's some commitment expected. Hence this 5-year provision. You would not be considered a homesteader. This land would not be yours unless you did it for at least 5 years. So just to say, for the better part of 100 years, until 1976, I think it was, when the Homesteading Act was repealed, or when it was expired, homesteading was largely understood in those terms. A homesteader was a farmer who took up land under the homesteading laws. Now, of course, today we've broadened the definition. We've loosened the definition a bit. Today it's not so much about government lands. It's not about where you are homesteading. It can be the West. It can be the East. It can be the North. It can be the South. It's not even about on what scale you are homesteading. But at the heart of what homesteading is all about today, and I think if you think about it, it's at the heart of what homesteading always has been about, and it's this point right here, that the homesteader is trying for at least some degree of home production for their needs. That's what the homesteader is trying to do. They are trying to, as much as they are able, meet their own needs, whether that's on 160 acres or whether that's in your small fenced-in backyard, whether that is trying to grow 100% of your food, or whether you're just trying to grow enough to supplement the grocery budget. The idea is to make enough, to try to make enough to meet your own needs. That's the goal. And I would say that is actually the original American dream. Now, I understand today a lot of people have come to associate the American dream with, say, the comforts and conveniences of a nice suburban home with a white picket fence. Have you heard that before? If that's your American dream, that's fine. But just understand, originally, the American dream wasn't about a white picket fence. The American dream was about 40 acres and a mule. Not for comfort and convenience, but for self-reliance and sustainability. And get this, that was the American dream, not just for settlers and homesteaders. That was the American dream of our own government. Our government wanted its citizens to be settlers of the land. And the reason for that actually goes back a lot further than the Homesteading Act. The reason for that goes back to the founding of our country, when many of the founding fathers understood that to have a truly free and independent nation, you must have free and independent citizens. Does that make sense? The common, self-reliant yeoman farmer, as he was described, or what we might just say is the common homesteader, being the ideal model for what self-reliance actually looks like. Thomas Jefferson once said, "We have lands enough to employ an infinite number of people in their cultivation. For cultivators of the earth are the most valuable citizens. They're the most vigorous. They are the most independent. They are the most virtuous." I could talk a long time about the connection between freedom and farming, as Jefferson saw it. But just to try and give you a summary, as one historian puts it, he says, "For Jefferson, the farmer is the only truly free citizen, because the farmer can feed himself, no grocery store required. He can shelter himself, no construction company needed. He can clothe himself. There's the spinning wheel. There's the loom. There's the merino sheep waiting to be clipped. And he can warm himself. The axe and the crosscut saw are sitting in the shed." He says a family farmer is not only largely self-sufficient in practical terms, even in the event of a worldwide economic collapse or constitutional breakdown, but by mastering the basic skills of living, the farmer also becomes spiritually independent. Habits of independence, self-sufficiency, self-confidence, and political liberty come from growing a garden, chopping wood, building a barn or a cabin, stripping an engine, rewiring the dairy tank, welding a trailer gate, butchering your own hog. Again, the idea is independence, self-reliance, not comfort and convenience. So the ability to stand on your own two feet, the ability to meet your own needs, the ability to do it yourself as much as you're able, apart from depending on government, apart from depending on grocery store, apart from depending on employer, that's the foundation of what real freedom looks like. And I'd say that's the goal, isn't it? That's the goal for a lot of homesteaders. I know it was the goal for our family. Because I'll tell you, like those early pioneering homesteaders, my wife and I also packed up the wagon, so to speak. And we set out to make a go of it on our own piece of land so that we also were able to try as much as we were able to provide for our own needs. And while I won't tell you that we're completely self-reliant, we don't grow all of our own food. We don't sew our own clothes. We don't do all of our own mechanic work by ourselves. I can tell you that we have managed to create a life for ourselves where our time is largely our own. And we are our own bosses. And for the most part, we are working to meet our own needs and to manage ourselves. So to give you just a little snapshot of what homesteading life looks like for us, an average day for us starts about 5 or 6 in the morning. And that's not because we want to get up at that time or that we need to get up that time. That's just when our body clock wakes us up. And so what my wife and I will do at that time is we'll fix some coffee and we'll spend some quiet time together. We'll talk, we'll reflect, we'll plan out the day. you know, before all the kids come tumbling down the stairs, disrupting everything, looking for breakfast. So we redeem that time. And then after breakfast is all figured out, we start knocking out the morning chores. So we let out the chickens. We will check on the sheep. And recently we just had some new baby lambs. So my kids run out and make sure the lambs are still okay. We'll feed the pigs. We'll feed the dog and cat. All the paper and cardboard that was collected from the day before. One of my sons will go out and he'll burn in the burn barrel. If it's garden season, Amy will probably already be out pulling weeds. She'll be picking produce before the sun is too hot. And if there's a lot to pick, then the kids and I are right there giving her a hand. Also, if there's a lot that gets picked, then Amy starts preparing to have several rounds of canning in the kitchen. And this is another thing that we try to knock out as early as possible, because if you do any canning, especially if you do several rounds of canning, you know the kitchen can get quite warm. So we try to knock that out early. Here are some examples of things that Amy has canned. Here's some carrots here, green beans, dried beans, tomato soup, tomato paste, tomato sauce, salsa, jams and jellies, and so forth. If there are herbs to be dried, what we'll do is we'll get those picked, we'll get those de-stemmed, we'll wash them, we'll lay them out on trays, and then we'll put them in our solar dehydrator. After those chores are done, then Amy will get started on all the homeschool lessons with the kids at the kitchen table, and I'll tell you, that starts to occupy a good chunk of her day. The next several hours are occupied with that. Here she is taking them out to do a botany lesson by identifying some plants. And while she's doing all of that, I then get started on some of my projects. And how that usually begins is I'll find a quiet place in the house, maybe in my office, maybe on the porch, and I'll get my books, I'll get my papers, and I'll do a little bit of reading. And then I'll start creating a battle plan for the day, my own to-do list. And I'll pick several priority projects that I'm going to want to work on that day, and when I'm ready, I get to work on those. It could be planting seeds, might be tilling garden rows, might be setting fence posts, stacking wood. Recently, I worked on a new deck. If it's winter season, one of our days may be occupied butchering one of the hogs. And if we are butchering, then there is all of the meat that needs to be processed. And then all of the lard that needs to be rendered. And what my wife will do with that is she'll end up making homemade soaps, a lot of which are right out on our table. If it's the weekend and it's a Saturday, we're going to be at farmer's market. We're going to be selling a lot of the things that we have produced. If it's a Sunday, we're going to be in church. And when we're not busy with church responsibilities, when we're not busy with farm responsibilities, we are free to do what we want to do. That may be camping. That may be going to the lake with friends. Here's my son participating in a Civil War reenactment. not all of this stuff has to wait for the weekend to do, but we get to manage our week. We get to pace our week how we want to pace our week, and that's a kind of freedom that most people have to wait until retirement to enjoy. But here, I've been enjoying it since the age of 35. But the point I want to make is none of that happened overnight. No, we spent 10 hard, strenuous, disciplined years to get to where we are today. So with our remaining time, what I'd like to do is just give you three things, all right? Three steps or three principles that we applied over the years to get us here. Feel free to write any of these down if you find them helpful. But the first thing, and it really did start here, is that we began by cultivating deep-rooted conviction. Deep-rooted conviction. When I think back on how our journey started, it wasn't because either of us were particularly interested or at all experienced in homesteading. But we didn't have any gardening experience. We didn't know how to birth a lamb. We didn't know how to do any of this stuff. All the things that the speakers are talking about today, we didn't have a clue. And honestly, we didn't have an interest. Didn't know about growing tomatoes, digging post holes, or any of that. But where it did start for us was the planting and the cultivation of some core ideas in our thinking about what our actual values were and what our actual desires were in this life. Really, it started for me while I was still at the office. And by the way, I spent 15 years at one of the leading law firms in Little Rock, not a lawyer myself, but I did work for those guys. I was able to enjoy a pretty good salary, good benefits, holiday bonuses, great vacation packages, great view of the city from one of those upper floors, arguably a really good gig. But honestly, I did not feel free. I felt chained down. I felt chained to my desk. I felt chained to my bosses. I felt chained to my email. Can anybody relate to that? Well, I started to wonder one day, what would life be like if I wasn't chained down? What would life be like if I was my own boss? I could manage my own time. What would I do with my time? Then I got to sort of the thinking that I thought, you know what? One of the things I'd love to do with my time is invest more in my marriage. I'd love to get to know my wife better. I'd love to work alongside my wife. You know, kind of like Adam and Eve in the garden, getting to work together. What would it be like to start a business with my wife? I also thought, what would it be like if I could invest more in my kids? Not just in the evenings when I get home from work, not just on the weekends when I have time off, but day in, day out. We're a homeschooling family, so there would be opportunity for that. What would it be like if I could participate in some of those subjects that I'm actually good at? What would it be like if my kids could follow me around, shadow me, allow me the opportunity to mentor them, disciple them? Got to thinking. I also started thinking, you know, what would it be like if I could be more self-reliant and better prepared for whatever scenario might come in the future? And I'll just lay it out on the table. I for one, do not have the greatest confidence in the trajectory of our economy. I don't have the greatest confidence in the direction of our society. I don't know where it's all going. I'm going to be optimistic about it. And I'm not an all-out, you know, stockpiling prepper. And yet, at the same time, I think preparation is really important. I think there's wisdom in having certain skills and having a certain means to take care of yourself should the need arise. Should there be another Great Depression or something worse? I thought, what if I had time for personal development? Instead of reading through all those legal documents all day, what if I could read things I wanted to read? What if I could read more history? What if I could read more biography? What if I could read gardening books and theology books? And so the simple, quiet homesteading life kept returning to my mind as a possible option of what that could look like. But it wasn't one of these, you know, passive daydreaming, oh, wouldn't it be nice if someday maybe? No, this was intentional. I thought hard. I prayed hard. I researched. I'd listen to podcasts. I'd listen to conference speakers. I'd listen to YouTube homesteaders. Anybody do that? And in doing all of that saturation, I started cultivating in myself some core convictions that I believe was the fuel, the jet fuel that launched us to where we are today. It was the motivation we needed. I like this quote, "All achievement, no matter what may be its nature or its purpose, must begin." Here's where it starts, with an intense, burning desire for something definite. In other words, you need to know what you want, and you need to really want it. All right. So that's the first thing. We developed some core convictions. Number two, we were strategic in our planning. So we didn't just dream all of this up. We started planning for it. And I could give you so much information about the different ways we approached this, but to just try and summarize them. Number one, how are we strategic? Well, we developed a plan to get on top of our finances. Before Amy and I ever thought about selling the house and buying a piece of land and getting animals and starting planting a bunch of stuff, we understood that if we could become, or if we could take steps to become financially free, we would already be half of the way there before ever having a farm, if we could do this. What do I mean by financially free? Well, I like this definition here. Financial freedom means having enough savings, financial investment, and cash on hand to afford the kind of life we desire for ourselves and for our families. I like that definition. The kind of life we desire. Well, we've already established that the kind of life we desire is a homesteading life. In order to afford that, what do we need? We need enough. Now, how much is enough? Well, in my book, my definition of enough doesn't need to be any more than enough. I think one of the big hang-ups with modern American thinking is that we have to have it all, right? We have to have it all, and therefore we need to make as much money as possible in order to afford it all. I think the winning strategy that a lot of people would be wise to apply is simply lowering your standard of living to what you need to get by. I'll give you seven things that we did specifically. I could talk so long. This was like 17 slides. I've tried to condense them down. We adopted a modest standard of living. All right, I just spoke on that. Number two, we applied a strict zero balance budget, using every penny we earned for the different needs we had. And the key word there is strict. Strict. We did not deviate. Number three, we stopped borrowing money and began accelerating the payoff of all our debts, including our mortgage. We believe the Bible verse that says the borrower is slave to the lender. So if we're going to be free, we need to get out of debt. If you want to know how we did that, just look up Google the debt snowball method. That's something popular with Dave Ramsey's material. We did it. It worked. I can recommend it. Number four, we diligently saved as much as possible, sometimes only $50 a month, sometimes only $100 a month for big expenses, including car repair, car replacement, our upcoming land purchase. Because understand, we've made the decision we're not going to start going into debt for everything. In order to buy stuff, we've got to save for it first on those large purchases. So we just started saving, including for the land purchase. Number five, we started investing as early as possible in my office's 401k plan, taking advantage of their employee match up to a certain percent. Now, assuming your workplace offers some kind of a retirement package, I highly recommend you do it. And to do it as early as possible, because there's a beautiful mathematical principle called compounding. And the earlier you start, the better you are in the long run. Now, I know the market's not doing really well right now. Not doing really well at all. But just to give you a little bit of encouragement, if you look at the trend from 1928, can you see these little bars right here? Those represent all the recessions that we've had since that time. All these X's are dips in the market. But what is happening over the long trend? We are having an upward movement. So my philosophy is, don't put all your eggs in one basket. No, we don't need to count. You don't rely fully on the market. But hey, assuming that it continues on, it's something you might consider for your retirement. Because by the way, Amy and I understand that eventually we're going to get to the age we don't want to be bending over, pulling weeds all the time. So we had to think about the long-term picture. Number six, we used every dollar of extra income. Every dollar. Birthday money, tax refund money, credit card points, holiday bonuses, raises in wages, extra part-time jobs. We used all of it toward our debt payoff and savings plan. What a lot of people do is when they get extra money of whatever kind, they just blow it on whatever. They buy some new gadget. We did not do that. We applied it to the plan, and we stayed the course without wavering for 10 years. How else were we strategic? Well, we designed a flexible work arrangement. Flexible work arrangement. What do I mean by that? Well, I know what a lot of people mean by that is developing some kind of remote work arrangement. And that's part of what I mean. Even before COVID, we started experimenting with some work from home options. But more of what I mean by this is we we created an arrangement where I began to trade money for time. Here's how it worked. Whenever I would get a raise at the office, usually happened once a year, at the end of the year, and we're talking about an hourly wage, not a salary. Instead of raising our standard of living, you know, because we got extra money, let's just buy extra stuff. No, we kept our standard of living the same. And instead what we did, as my hourly worth increased, is I requested and I went to my bosses and I negotiated gradually lesser time at the office. So I started at 40 hours a week, made a little bit more, so I said, can I go down to 37 and a half? And then to 35, and then to 32 and a half, and then to 30. And eventually I fell below the threshold of a full-time employee. I lost my benefits. Amy and I had a plan for that. But then we dropped it down to 28, and then 25, and 15. And I don't know all the different steps that we did. Eventually we got down to 8 hours a week. That was my work schedule. 8 hours a week. And basically, at this point, I'm just kind of a backup employee that has 15 to 20 years of experience and can help with special projects and advise the people on different things. So that's what we did. And by the way, if you're looking for a book that kind of goes into more detail on that, Tim Ferriss's book, The 4-Hour Work Week. I mean, I can't promote everything in that book, but it makes you think. It helps you think outside the box on negotiating flexible work arrangements with your bosses. Another thing we did is we waited patiently for the right opportunities. We wanted land, yes, but we didn't pick the first piece of property that crossed our path. We spent 2 years researching. We spent 2 years looking at listings, comparing properties, crunching the numbers. Do we like this commute time? Do we like this piece of property? And so forth. And we just didn't pull the trigger until it was the right fit. And then one day we met Mr. Jack. Now, Mr. Jack and Miss Mary were an older couple in our church, and Amy and I love meeting with the older generation to talk about the past, talk about how things used to be in the old days. And come to find out, Mr. Jack had 20 acres in Faulkner County he was looking to sell. Really? Can we come take a look? And so we went to take a look. 20 acres in Faulkner County, quite overgrown. A lot of brush and brambles on that thing. And as we did our walk around, I just started scratching my head. I wasn't so sure about this. Because for whatever reason, Mr. Jack had started to use the property for some type of staging area for a bunch of old, scrap, dilapidated, pest-infested, nail-littered trailers, like 7 or 8 of them, on the property. And we're walking the property. I'm like, yeah, this is nice. This is nice. And secretly, I'm thinking, what is this? What is this? But I try to keep an open mind. I tried to look past the junk at the actual land. And I thought, you know what, I can see potential here. I can see the diamond in the rough. And it also helped that Mr. Jack was willing to offer us a really good deal. So we took that deal. And we officially began our homesteading journey. And what we did from there is we were strategic in planning out a design for the farm. We didn't just start putting fences here and a barn there, and wouldn't it be nice, you know, to electric fence over here. No, we, at the beginning, before putting in our first shovel, we created a master plan. So what I did is I went on Google and I got one of those satellite images. Have you ever done that on Google Maps? I got a satellite image of the property, and I started identifying different features. I identified where the creek was. I looked for what my favorite trees were. I looked for where the well was, because there was an existing well. I looked where the closest power hookup would be. And then I thought, okay, where do we want to do our operation here? Because I got advice from an old experienced farmer once who said this: don't bite off more than you can chew. 20 acres is a lot of property that really we don't need to develop all of it. So let's scale it back. We scaled it back. We chose this, and We said, okay, here's where we could put the driveway. Here's where we could put the house. Here's how we would do the water line, the electric line. We started thinking about, you know, an herb garden, a future shop, a play area for the kids, a barn for the animals. Here's where the chickens could go. Here's where the sheep could go. Here's where the pigs could go. Here's where the dog could go. A bigger garden maybe someday. And as we expand, as we develop, maybe we could have a bigger paddock for the sheep over here, a bigger paddock for the pigs over there. Completely understanding none of this was going to happen overnight. Okay? We knew this was going to be a very long-term project, but it was very helpful to have it all sketched out in advance so that when we did start to develop different features, it all worked like a puzzle into a master plan. And I can say for the most part, we've kept to the plan and things are looking pretty good. The third thing we did after we dreamed this all up and after we planned this all out is we rolled up our sleeves and we got to work. We got to work, and the first thing we did was we bulldozed down those old trailers and we bush hogged the field and we started with a clean slate. And I started walking the property with that little sketch, that satellite image that I had, and I had a bunch of string and I started stringing out where things were going to go, kind of rough layouts, identified where this house was going to go, and I started to get to work on the house. Now remember, we're committed not to getting into debt. So in order to do this, I've got to do this myself. No building experience. YouTube can be very helpful. So I chose a design. It was called a Dutch colonial design, and I chose it for several reasons. One, it was, you know, as a farmhouse, it would be quite functional, quite economical in terms of being able to afford this thing. It was expandable, meaning as our family grew, I would be able to create additions onto the side. And perhaps most importantly, it was a design I thought I could figure out how to build myself. And so I got to work, and I did most of it myself. And there was no power out there at this time. I couldn't afford a generator. So most of this house was built with battery-powered tools and a hammer. All right. I can't say that I did it completely alone. I did have a helper. Fast forward 6 months. I've got the house nearly finished. It's looking okay, at least on the outside. On the inside, it's completely not ready. And our house sells. I mean, the house I'm working on still has plywood floors. It's got plumbing that's not finished, electrical that's not done, the drywall's not all finished, and like I said, the house sells. So what I do is we put all our stuff in storage, and I send Amy up to Illinois, where her parents are, to stay for a while. And a while, I don't know, a month or two, while I kept working on the house. Every spare moment I had, I'm still working at this point, so I'd sleep on this cot. It's wintertime by now, so I'm staying warm with a wood stove, no central heat in there or anything like that. I'd get up really early, I'd work on the house, and then I'd commute and work a full day, and then I'd come back and I'd work well into the night. The family's not here, so I'm able to clock every spare moment. Eventually, I get to the point where part of the house is livable. So I invite Amy and the kids back. But the bedrooms aren't done. What we have to do is we need to crash on the living room floor. Mattress on the floor. Kids break out the sleeping bags. This is going to be fun, right? I mean, bless Amy's heart. We go from the comforts and conveniences of the suburban house to, welcome to the floor, honey. And then she's pregnant during this time as well. Sorry, honey. But we keep working. Little improvement by little improvement by little improvement, and it's not a perfect house. The floor isn't level everywhere. Not all the rooms are square. There are defects I could point out in every area, but it was our house, and we built it ourselves. And there was some pride and some satisfaction in that, but I'll just be completely transparent with you. It was hard. It was so difficult. There were moments we just wanted to rip out our hair. Mattresses on the floor, no consistent hot water. because the hot water heater I'd purchased was this little tankless water heater. It was not able to keep up in the cold temperatures. We're having to sponge bathe our kids in front of the wood stove for a little bit of time. Amy's having to make multiple trips to the laundromat. It was a lot to handle. We couldn't afford a gravel driveway at the time. So 400 feet, we just have to park the van at the end of the property, at the entrance of the property, and walk every time we wanted to go somewhere. Amy's pregnant. She's, well, you get the idea. So we, back in the day when plywood was somewhat affordable, we have this little plywood boardwalk to get us there so we don't get stuck in the mud. We faced challenges. The creek flooded one year, really bad. We had a field fire that spread through. Somebody threw a cigarette butt out on Highway 89 and just spread through our entire property, took out a lot of fence posts. We've had challenges. We've dealt with the coyotes who've taken down the ewe. We've had the orphaned lamb who froze outside in one of those sudden Arkansas ice storms because they weren't able to get back. We've had our dog taken out by the neighbor's dog, the pit bull down the road. We've chased those escaped pigs on Sunday morning in our church clothes. We faced a lot of frustration. But I do remember this, and this has always stuck with me, a quote by Dave Ramsey. He said, "If you live like no one else, later you can live like no one else." That is to say, if you are willing to make the sacrifices now that most people aren't willing to make, later on you will be able to live as those folks will never be able to live. True. True statement. And though we went through all the challenges and the frustrations and we wanted, there were tears, we rose our voice several times. But the sacrifices were worth it. Because on the other side, we did start to see progress. We started to build momentum. We were able to experience breakthrough because guess what? Eventually those bedrooms were finished. we did get a driveway put in. The frozen pipes and the hot water situation was figured out. We eventually did pay off all our debts, including the mortgage. We even got to go visit the Dave Ramsey studio. Got to do our debt-free scream. We've made progress with the animals, the chickens, the sheep, the pigs. We've got an awesome customer base now at Farmers Market. We've got a website that's doing a great job. I know we're out of time, so if I could just encourage you and leave you with some encouragement here, it would be this. Dream. And dream big. Understand what your goals are in life, what your values are in life, and make those priorities. The other thing is plan. Be strategic. Don't just jump in not knowing what you're doing, jumping in blindly. No, map it out. Think it through. Crunch the numbers. The other thing is roll up your sleeves and get to work. Get to work. Keep your hand to the plow. Stay the course, and you'll get there. You will get there. So thank you for being here. Thank you for being at this conference. And if you have questions, come and see one of us, see Amy or myself, and we'd love to talk to you. Thank you very much.